Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Do you want to have a 1K payday? Head to thegamenashville.com and enter this keyword, bread. You'll instantly qualify for a chance to win $1,000 in this nationwide contest. Enter the keyword bread at thegamenashville.com. The 1K payday is brought to you in part by Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. So make sure you head to thegamenashville.com and enter in that keyword now. Let's welcome Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network, here to the program. Darren, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Good morning, Ronnie and John. How you guys doing?
Nicely done.
I feel like nobody calls you guys by your names anymore.
I know.
This show just has like 376 names. It's unbelievable.
That's what we do here. Just changing things up, keeping people on their toes. Ryan Yarnpork here on the show.
I know. You guys never cease to amaze me with what the listeners are calling you guys these days.
Last week it was Vibe Stanley.
Yeah, vibing. Doing a lot of work here on the program. Lots of different names.
It could always be worse. That's true. Is what, you know, I've told myself for a long time.
Absolutely. It could be a lot worse. Darren,
when are you going to get a shirt so we can all wear them and, you know, post them on social media that we're all vibing?
Oh, my response to that would be stay tuned.
Oh, okay.
That would be my response.
All right.
And we'll
like that.
Exciting stuff coming, Darren.
I'll leave it at that for right now, but
let me just tell
immediate
you,
response would be stay tuned.
You guys know this. If you have promised Adam Vingan a shirt, you better get it to him because he will be very mad.
I know. It'll be weeks on the
program. He will just wear you out about that shirt, okay?
That's right.
I'm just saying. Take it from experience.
That's right. I mean, got any gift cards you've been tossed around there lately?
I'm still trying to get it to him,
okay.
Right?
All right. We'll see how that goes. Darren, I was really interested to see the Predators in this matchup, both Thursday and on Saturday against Carolina. We've talked about it with you. We've talked about it here on our show. It's basically felt like two different seasons with the Predators, with the way that they played the first part of the year and now what they've done recently. Very similar results against Carolina. You're talking about a team that shoots a lot of pucks. They possess the puck for a lot, no matter who they're playing. I mean, they're really gifted at holding on to the puck. What did you think in the Predators or of the Predators in these two games against Carolina? And did it make you feel any differently about this group, or could it just be, hey, Carolina's really good, and this has just been a bad matchup for the Predators all season long?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, they haven't fared well against the top teams. I mean, yes, everybody remembers the 7-2 victory over Tampa, but do you remember the record before going into that game against Tampa? It was 1-6,
yep.
So it's not like they had success. They're 0-5-1 now against Carolina. They haven't had their success against the top-tier teams, not only in the division, but let's be honest, these are top-tier teams in the league. I mean, these are teams in the Predators division that could win it all. I mean, they're that talented. Carolina is just impressive to watch. They really are. Like, they don't – and I don't want to take – this always sounds horrible when you say this because Aho is a tremendous player, Trocheck. I say this with – this is actually a compliment. It's with affection. They don't wow you with star power. Like, you don't look up and down their roster and go, holy cow, you know, murderer's row. I just am impressed with them because they play within a system that works for them. They are very well coached, and they just make it extremely difficult. They're fast, and as you said, Robbie, they just make it really difficult to get through neutral ice to establish any zone time. They make you work for everything. And, oh, by the way, if you're not working for everything, they're going to keep the foot on the gas. They're coming after you. If you're not going to work, they're going to make you pay. They're just they're an interesting team to watch. And obviously a team that I think can make some serious noise. Did anything change? No, not really, not at all. I mean, I think one thing that I brought up in those post games were stating the obvious is you can just tell the difference. This power play, and John Hines was asked about it Thursday night, and he's not going to make excuses. He's not going to say, well, we don't have Forsberg and Tolvanen. I mean, yep. He's not going to do that, and I understand that, but we can say it. They don't have Tolvanen and Forsberg, and man, boy, you can see that power play is just average or below average. It feels kind of like the old power play units without those two guys in there. They just make such a huge difference with the man advantage, and until they get them back in the lineup, I don't know what's going to change on the power play. Forsberg's missed 12 games. Tolvanen's missed 6 games, and hopefully they can get them back in there because the power play unit looks kind of lost without them. The other thing is Thursday night, and I brought this up, is, you know, and there was a change made, but, man, Jeremy Davies kind of got a welcome to the NHL, and I know he's been playing a little bit here in this stretch, but I thought that third D pairing really got exposed against Carolina Thursday night of Ben Harper and Jeremy Davies, and that prompted John Hines to play Eric Gabrudson, Gabranson, who made his Predator debut, a guy who's no stranger to the league. I mean, he's played over 550 games in the league, coming over from Ottawa at the trade deadline. But those are the things that probably stood out to me. Nothing's really changed. Look, this thing is going to come down to the wire. And who between the three of us, the four of us, who didn't think that wasn't going to be the case, right? This is probably going to come down to the very end.
So the immediate, you know, attention, of course, is on Chicago, three games this week. But Dallas lurking. Who right now would you consider the bigger threat to beat the Preds out for that last spot, Darren?
Well, you know, I'll say this. Willie has been, you know, he keeps going, Dallas. He's been doing this for like a month, and I'm like, Willie, at some point, like, it's up to them. Like, you can have games in hand all day, but, you know, what are they going to do, turn it on in game 51? I mean, at what point are they going to turn it on? But with that being said, it is, they are lurking, and it does kind of feel like that shark, like we're on the surfboard, and you can kind of see like that shadow down beneath you, and it's pretty scary. You're not sure if it's a shark. You're not sure, you know, what's going on, but you see kind of the shadow lurking underneath the water, and that's what Dallas feels like, and their schedule is very kind to them over the next week and a half, 2 weeks. And so you do wonder. I know Radulov is out for the year. They've said Bishop is not coming back. So they did get bad news. But, boy, they are just hovering. And, yeah, I do think it's a three-team race, even though I've tried to poo-poo Dallas away. And Willie's been saying, oh, watch out for the Stars. And I think he's probably going to be right on this because I do think they're going to be in the mix, Joe. And like I said, I think this week is going to be really exciting to see how these three games play out Monday, tonight, Wednesday, and Friday, and then what Dallas is doing, and then I can only imagine what we're talking about this time next week.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the Preds pre- and post-game duties, on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And to that point, I mean, Dallas has got four games this week against Detroit. So if there's ever a time to make a run, this is it for Dallas coming up this week against Detroit. Darren, I want to ask you about
Detroit. By the way, Robbie, Detroit just swept Carolina before this Predator series. You know,
that is true.
In Raleigh. So you never know with Detroit.
That is true. And they play a certain way defensively. They can give you fits. So we'll see if they can do that against the Stars this week. Darren, I do want to ask you about Matt Duchene. He comes back into the lineup on Saturday night. He plays on the wing on the third line. I was interested to see where John Hines was going to put him. Because to me, there's no way you're taking out Granlund and moving him back to the wing with the way he's played down the middle for this group. I mean, I just think he's been so good in that spot. So as you kind of forecast where this is going here over the next stretch that the Predators have coming up, where do you put Matt Duchene? Like, do you keep him on the wing? Do you keep him on the third line? Where do you put Matt Duchene as they continue to try to solve this with hopefully more pieces coming back in the lineup at some point?
It's an excellent question, Robbie. I wish I got paid that kind of money to make those type of decisions because I would not want to be John Hines. And look, Matt Duchene was back in the lineup after missing 22 games on Saturday. I thought he played fine. And it's one game, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but it's just starting to feel like he's kind of the square peg. Right, it's like we went through this with Kyle Turris, right? Because he kept toggling back and forth, center, wing. They weren't sure, moving him up and down the lineup. And it's like, I don't know, is this kind of the start of Matt Duchene feeling like the square peg in the round hole? I don't know, because you're right. How in the world would you take Granlund out of that second line, centering that second line, the way that Cunnan and Yarncroke and Granlund have played, in particular the way Granlund has played? I don't know. I thought he played fine on Saturday. I think he was playing fine before the injury. But I just wonder, like, the way this team, it feels like the way John Hines likes this team and what he's all about, I don't know. It just doesn't feel comfortable to me on what is the right thing for Matt Duchene. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you guys think, but I'm just telling you that this is not a bad thing. I'm just saying it's starting to feel a little bit like a square peg for me. Like, I'm not sure they know what to do. What do you guys think?
I would agree. I mean, I think right now my immediate answer would be to just put him on the wing and maybe move him up, maybe slide Cunning down. Like, I know that line's played really well, but like I just don't know how productive Matt Duchene's going to be playing with Eric Halla and Nick Cousins. Like, I just don't know what you're going to solve there. So I do think a little of what you said plays into this too. It does kind of feel like a square peg in a round hole. Like, you're great and you feel awesome about the way Granlund's played, but now what do you do with Matt Duchene? And look, I mean, this has already started. They're 0-1 with him back in the lineup. And Adam Vingan puts out an article yesterday on The Athletic just kind of talking about Duchene, his role here. And, you know, it's not his fault that they lost that game Saturday night. But, I mean, some of the replies to it, Darren, from fans, I mean, fans are really in a tough spot right now with Matt Duchene.
Yeah. No, I knew that would be coming. I kind of feel like, look, and here's the other part of this, right? I'm not speaking for him, but I just kind of feel like, and I got the same vibe with Turris, like they're going to do what the team asked them to do, but they think they're centermen, right? They want to be centermen. They're not interested really in being wingmen. Forwards out on the outside. Like I said, Duchene's not going to say that, but that's just the vibe. Like, he came here to center a line, and I don't think he really wants to be out on the wing, and he's not going to say that. That's just my vibe. I don't know if you read it that way. I felt like Turris was the same way, that he really didn't want to be on the wing. He wanted to be centering the line. And so if that is kind of in the backdrop and you keep him out on the wing, like, is that going to work long term? I mean, he's got long ways to go in his contract. Yeah. So how are you going to make that work if he thinks he's a centerman and that's really where he wants to be and that's where he wants to play, and right now your vision is out on the wing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I know things have changed since he first came here, and they've got a new coach now, and he's not been as productive as anybody has wanted since he's come here. But, I mean, he made it pretty clear when he got here that he wanted to be a center and that he was signed to play center. So that's going to be fascinating to try to figure out as they move forward here. Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can catch him every day here on ESPN 102.5 The Game from 10 to 2 on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Always fun, guys. Thanks.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Darren had to say there and also get into some Tennessee Vols football as well. Some recruiting battles that are being lost, but a transfer happening today at Tennessee as well at the quarterback position. We'll discuss all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to give away a hockey home gating party. It's time to text the word GOLD to 615-737-1025. That's GOLD to 615-737-1025. Now to enter for a chance to win a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter, so make sure you get those texts in right now. It's a 615-737-1025. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us in the last segment. Joe, let me ask you that question. What do you think the Predators will do? What do you think they should do with Matt Duchene moving forward here? With the situation that's been created, you've got Johansson down the middle. You've got Granlund coming in playing very well down the middle on the second line. What do you do with Matt Duchene as you move forward here?
Well, you put him in the best position to succeed. And that doesn't necessarily mean you put him at center, because Granlund is giving you great play there. Yep. So wherever he goes, okay, play your butt off and contribute and fall in, man. I mean, you are falling into a team that, I guess that's what, 13 of 18 now after Carolina. That's
still pretty good.
That's pretty good. So, look, and I get, to me, it's not even like, well, if he plays well, then he earns. No, it's not about that. Where are you better? How are you better? Are you better with Granlund? Then keep him there. I mean, I agree with you. I think maybe moving him up to that line might be a good move, you know, because obviously you want to take advantage of what he can do, and so you want him with players who are more top six forwards.
Yep.
But, I mean, it's on him to, you know, to get in there and make a difference wherever he is in this lineup. And I think that this is a really, obviously, important stretch, not just for the Preds, but for Duchesne to come back off this injury and produce and put some points on the board and help this team get to the playoffs and do something in the playoffs. I mean, I think this is – it's still, to me, very early in the big picture of his deal with the Preds, but it's time, you know, for a guy with 8 points in 24 games now to do more than that.
Yeah, I mean, the playing well part of it's great. You got to start to produce. That's the bottom line as you move forward here. Christopher on Periscope says, Darren's vibing, y'all. That's true. He was vibing in that last segment. Let's see if the Predators can get back to vibing tonight against Chicago.
We haven't.
Vibes got disrupted a little bit, but trying to get it back.
We haven't heard that as much. And when a team's not winning, you don't hear it as much. What that's if true. They would have won?
Oh, that like vibe would be games. Really strong.
The Preds' man. Official account would be, man, who knows what they would do? Who knows what kind of little videos they might have ready to go for the next win?
Could be. Well, maybe we'll find out tonight.
Hopefully with your beautiful face in there, too.
Maybe we'll find out tonight. Joe, let's get into the Tennessee Vols. Some news on the transfer front today. This coming from, I think, Austin Price was the first one I saw with it from VolQuest and Rivals, saying that they are adding to the quarterback position. Looks like Michigan quarterback Joe Milton heading on his way to Knoxville for Rocky Top. So Joe Milton taking over at quarterback last year for Michigan. He was 80 of 141, a 56% completion percentage, 1,077 yards, 4 touchdowns. 4 interceptions. If memory serves me correctly, I believe he was an Elite 11 recruit coming out of high school. Did not go well last year for Michigan. Did not go well for him at quarterback last year. What do you think of this, of Joe Milton looking like he's going to be added to the quarterback room here at Tennessee?
Yeah, and Michigan's had a lot of September Heismans. And going into last year, it was like, oh, this Joe Milton. And I remember the game against Minnesota, I believe, was the opener, and he looked great. And then didn't. Quickly. So I think he's got physical ability, you know. He's got a big arm, can move around, but he certainly, whether it's him, the OC, Harbaugh, it didn't work, didn't look good. So we'll see. I mean, it's not a bad thing to bring in more talent there, more competition, but I don't know if that's a reason to rant and rave and be all excited. But hey, something positive is good on that front after this latest recruiting loss, which, I don't know, maybe it's not a huge surprise to people, but I just feel like if Kentucky comes into Nashville and takes some coveted recruits that normally would almost be locks to Tennessee, I don't blame Josh Heupel, but I think it indicates the difficulty of what he's got ahead of him here.
Well, I think it does too. And you bring up, you know, Destin and Keaton Wade going to Kentucky, them coming in out of Summit High School, highly recruited. And we've talked a lot with David Ubben about the 2022 class in state here for Tennessee and how important that's going to be. And quite frankly, it's not going very well for Tennessee right now. You lose Ty Simpson, of course, which I think we knew was going to happen. He's ended up in Alabama. It's hard to blame a kid for going to Alabama at this point.
Right.
So I don't think that's a big surprise. Now, he's not signed yet. He's committed. But it would be very difficult for me to imagine him changing his mind. He's probably going to end up at Alabama. Now you lose these two with Destin and Keaton Wade to Kentucky. Like, it's one thing to lose an in-state recruit to Alabama. It's quite another to lose them to Kentucky. That is not sitting well for Tennessee fans. Again, I agree with you. Like, I think it's difficult at this point to blame Josh Heupel because this program is a mess. He has inherited a mess. We know that, and it's going to take a long time to dig your way out of it. But I will say one of the concerns we had when Heupel was hired was, all right, how's he going to do in recruiting? Because recruiting was going the wrong way at UCF. I'm not willing to go there yet, but this is not a very good start for Josh Heupel in Tennessee when it comes to that important in-state class in 2022.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, with the the Wade kids talked about the bowl situation.
Yep.
That was, you know, and that is. That's, I mean, I promise you, every other coach out there is using it. I promise you. You know, why would you want to go to a place that's about to be on probation? So that's just one more thing to make it more difficult. Which, again, when you're going to do this and fire someone for cause, these are some of the things you have to anticipate if you're the Tennessee administration. But another interesting thing about this is that Pruitt, obviously, you know, only prioritize one of these guys, and you know the lesser of the two. Not every school was recruiting both of them, and that seems to have hurt Heupel here too.
Yep.
Pruitt's approach, even though it's a new staff, I mean that right there probably means the family was looking around earlier anyway if they definitely wanted those two to play together. So look, it's hard to lose to Kentucky, but I tell you what, you know, talk about a model for building a program out of rubble.
Yeah.
You know, Stoops has done an unbelievable job. They are loading up. They just beat out Clemson and Alabama for a 5-star offensive lineman. So, I mean, he's got it rolling there like I never would have expected from Kentucky. And this is a guy who, I think he had losing records his first 3 years. Now, it's a lot easier at Kentucky to stick with someone, you know, who struggles early, right? But Kentucky is definitely it's the example of how continuity can eventually pay off for you. Tennessee hasn't had it. Not saying any of these guys who've been fired should have gotten more time, but I'm just saying if you keep changing every few years, it gets harder and harder and harder.
Joe, going back to the Milton conversation here with Joe Milton coming in apparently from Michigan to the quarterback room at Tennessee. Quarterback room's a little crowded right now. I mean, you've got Caden Salter in there as a freshman. You've got Hendon Hooker that's transferred in as well. Harrison Bailey already there. I mean, you've got Brian Maurer there as well. And now Joe Milton coming in. That's five quarterbacks, all of which are going to want to play. I don't – like, somebody's got to be leaving soon, right?
Yeah, has to be. And frankly, like, what is Milton looking at?
I don't know.
You know, I would have to think that there would be lighter QB rooms out there for Milton to join. You know?
You would think so.
But, yeah.
He really likes Josh Heupel.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, Maurer has according to people watching practice, has looked the best.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have been, honestly, Maurer was a guy I absolutely expected to be somewhere else by now.
Me too.
But, yes, after spring ball, I mean, I guess I would think, I mean, is Harrison Bailey leaving? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, they just brought in Hooker. They just brought in Salter. Now Milton's coming in. If Maurer is in a position of strength after the spring, I think the spring game is actually going to be interesting in part for that reason, to just see what the QBs look like. But, I mean, if he's in a position of strength, shoot, man, Harrison Bailey may be the guy that looks around and says, I can go somewhere else. I mean, it happens fast, especially with QBs in this sport. So I agree. Like, it's somewhat curious that a guy would be transferring into this spot right now at that position.
Joshua on Twitter says, Milton has a fastball for a cannon, but could never throw the touch pass to the receivers at Michigan.
Yeah, like I didn't watch a ton. I mean, I watched like the Michigan State game last year. He was bad. That was a stunning loss for Michigan. And he just missed some throws that you have to make. And then just seems like he lost confidence. Again, the Minnesota game, you saw like the big play potential from him. He made some – I mean, he's talented. But again, that consistent accuracy that you got to have. Haven't seen it. And in this offense, I mean, high volume passing the ball, I don't know that he exactly fits it.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Vols, taking your thoughts on Periscope on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. All that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pro Golf is coming to Nashville this May with the Simmons Bank Open. Text the keyword GOLF now to 615-737-1025. That's GOLF to 615-737-1025 for a chance to win a weekend pass for four to enjoy the event in style, including food and drink, plus a Predators gift pack, including a polo shirt, golf balls, and umbrella. Text GOLF to 615-737-1025 now to enter and to win. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Joe, talking Vols, we mentioned the recruiting battles in state not going well for Josh Heupel and company in 2022 in that important class. Obviously, not all of that is Josh Heupel's fault. He is inheriting a very tough situation with Jeremy Pruitt and what he's left behind here with Tennessee. Christopher on Periscope asks, how much time should Heupel get to turn this program around?
I mean, I fire him now.
We're already there, man.
Come on, Josh. Sorry, buddy. Well, I tell you this, in all seriousness on Heupel, I mean, expectations have to be lower They have to be lower than they've been with some of the some of his predecessors, because he's got some kind of – I mean, frankly, I think Tennessee right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happened at some point, needs to go ahead and just ban itself from the postseason next year. Just do it this year. And then beyond that, so you have that, you're that's working against you. I mean, you have a lot of things working against you. And again, you got Kentucky in your division. Kentucky's roster is going to be, I would say, markedly more talented than your roster.
I would agree.
In the next couple of years.
Which I'm sure you feel great about if you're a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just reality.
It's just the truth.
And again, this is not Heupel's fault. So, I mean, Heupel, to me, has got to get time. But also, I mean, Heupel, if he can get this team to bowl eligibility this year, again, even if they do, if they self-impose, I think that's a benchmark, get to six. If he can get around there the next 3 years, then okay. Then that's positive, which I know some Tennessee fans right now probably are saying, no way. And if, as we go through it, if they're having 6-6 seasons, there's going to be – that's a lot tougher, right?
Yeah.
But I think that that's – then from there, okay, it's time to start getting to the 8-win thing that you kind of expected to be built in all along, but it's not what it is anymore, in my opinion.
I would agree. Like, look, it's Tennessee. So at some point here, and it's not going to be – that long from now. It's probably not going to be this year, but year two, into year three, there is going to be a significant portion of the fan base that wants to see this thing turned around quickly and for them to get back up to that 9-10 win mark. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's what's going to happen. I think you need to have a realistic approach here with Josh Heupel, who I've gone on record. I don't love the hire. Like, I don't think it was a great hire by Danny White bringing in Josh Heupel. I will gladly have him prove me wrong, but I just it does not excite me. I think you're probably going to be going through this process again here sometime in 4 or 5 years. But I do wonder, like, if you've gotten to the point, if you're Tennessee, where maybe you just need to leave something together for like 5 or 6 years and see if you can reach some point of stability with this team so that when you do have to make the new move for the next guy to come in, there's a better ground floor, there's a more stable environment around. And maybe you can try to build the program from there. Like, I almost wonder if that's where Tennessee's gotten with their football program right now, with all the turnover and everything that's happened in the last decade plus.
Like, can Heupel be a good bridge coach? We talk about bridge goalies all the time. Yeah. I mean, look, for all of Jeremy Pruitt's faults, and he had a few, he was super aggressive and pretty effective on the recruiting trail. And, you know, I thought Ubben did a – yeah, hey, do what you got to do, man. But, you know, Ubben had a good story about some of these guys on the roster who Heupel has inherited, who, you know, kind of point to the recruiting, but also the development of player effectiveness that Pruitt could have. I mean, that was one of the things I like most about him coming in. And I just, with Heupel, it's a very small sample, you know, and so you got to keep that in mind.
Sure.
But the fact that Central Florida went the wrong way in terms of recruiting is concerning. And until we can see him get some big wins here with some guys Tennessee needs, I think the recruiting aspect of his job is certainly worrisome.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, from Heupel's point of view, he just needs to do decent enough to get him another job afterwards. Maybe so. I mean, you're not going to get another big-time Power 5 job afterwards if you're average at Tennessee, would be my guess. But I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I think you're probably right. But I also think some people look at this job and all that has gone on and say, if you can get to 7-8 wins regularly at Tennessee, you actually have done pretty well.
Yeah.
And it's sad to say that out loud, but I think you're right. There's got to be an extended period of just stability and, you know, just like build an identity as a team and play to that identity. We know how he wants to play. Look, can Tennessee get to like what some good Missouri teams were like? Again, this is like a conversation Tennessee fans are like, shut up!
Cringing.
But like the Missouri teams that would win 48, 45 games. I mean, that's...
I've got a twitch in my eye right now just thinking about it.
I know, but hey, at least you'd have entertaining offense, and I do think that he's got a chance to build good offenses here. You have to find that guy at quarterback. That right there makes it better in a markedly different way from the last regime. But I don't have a ton of confidence in this defense this year, and I got concerns about this defense moving forward.
So the spring game is coming up on Saturday for the Vols. And look, I saw they were playing Alabama's spring game on TV the other day with Saban out there in his pink suit, his pink tie walking around, and guys you've never even heard of before making like ridiculous one-handed circus catches on the sideline. I mean, it was just absurd to watch out there. Bryce Young chucking the ball all over the field. So that's great. Alabama's going to be good next year. Spring games to me largely have been a total waste of time, like from a viewer standpoint of just watching these things happen. And then like, okay, I guess you get your college football fix sometime in April. But this one to me is kind of interesting, especially now with the quarterback room being what it is. Like, I'm interested to see what the quarterbacks look like under this new offense with Josh Heupel and the pace they're going to play at coming up on Saturday. That's going to be fascinating to me. I actually have some interest in a spring football game.
Yeah, no, I do too. I mean, I think the highest opportunity for interest would be first-year coaches just to even see what they're running and how the guys are running it. Like Vanderbilt had theirs last week. Offense rolled, by the way. Although it's funny because I went to a scrimmage a week before and the defense was better. So look, you can't take much out of it. Usually the defense is ahead of offenses in the spring. I don't anticipate that for Tennessee Saturday. But, yeah, I'm very interested to see how these quarterbacks look in this offense, how some of the receivers look too. Like, is Jalen Hyatt, you know, has he had a good offseason in the weight room? Bayless Jones, you know, they've got some talent.
Can anybody on defense run with Jalen Hyatt? That would be something to watch as well, because my immediate answer is no.
Yeah. But that's the whole question with Maurer is – I did not anticipate this spring going in the direction of Maurer looking better than the other guys. You know, Maurer is always a guy I thought, a lot of talent, but again, is he an efficient, you know, consistent thrower of the football? Kind of the same thing with Milton. But, hey, sometimes guys can find something, and maybe this offense suits him perfectly.
Don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on Thursday, April 29th and Friday, April the 30th on 102.5 The Game, presented by Founders Brewery, Apple Collision Centers, Freedom Tire Guys, and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Be sure to join us on site as 102.5 The Game will be broadcasting live on Thursday, April 29th from 3rd and Home, Germantown's Bar with a ballpark, and on Friday, April 30th from Boom Boss, Craft Pizza, and Tap House in East Nashville. It's going to be a lot of fun coming up. The NFL draft a little bit more than a week away now, so we are getting very close. Make sure you're joining us for the best NFL draft coverage here in Nashville. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on college sports. Got a little Vandy UT baseball action over the weekend and a top five matchup in baseball. Also, Nashville SC gets their weekend underway as well. We'll have some tickets to give away as well. Coming up next, we'll do that next on Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well.
Getting some flack from some unnamed writers in town for the closeness of my face to the screen.
Are you?
I would just like to say that I also do not like my face that close to the screen. So I don't blame you, but still shut up.
We're going to start doing this every day then.
Every single day.
I like the far away, you know? You can kind of.
We did have Christopher on Periscope earlier say, I love you, Joe, and what you write. Well, you're a little scary up close.
Oh, just put yourself in the shoes of Katie Rexroad on a daily basis. What a beautiful life it's been, Katie, for you. That's right. You lucky gal.
That's right. Every day this week at 9:45, we are going to be giving away a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC take on CF Montreal coming up on Saturday at 1 o'clock at Nissan Stadium. Nashville SC got their season underway this past Saturday night, a 2-2 tie against FC Cincinnati in a game where they totally dominated possession. They had, I think, 32 shots in that game, 13 corner kicks. I mean, they were all over the place. A 2-2 draw, down 2-0 in that game. Come back and find a way to tie it up, and probably, honestly, should have won that game with the way that they played. So a good start to the season for Nashville SC. They'll be taking on Montreal coming up on Saturday. And we have a trivia question today on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth, today's trivia question I turn over to you for an opportunity to text in to win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC take on Montreal coming up on Saturday.
The question simply is, which two teams did NSC beat in the playoffs last year? Their first ever appearance in the MLS Cup playoffs.
So if you know the two teams that Nashville SC knocked off last year in the MLS playoffs, send those in to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, for your chance to win some tickets to see Nashville SC take on Montreal coming up on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. And Joe, we mentioned it, Nashville SC, a draw over the weekend in a game they dominated against FC Cincinnati. I was in Cincinnati as this game was going on, and unbeknownst to us, we accidentally walked into a FC Cincinnati watch party. So it was pretty interesting to watch the game in there with a bunch of FC Cincinnati fans who, by the end of the game, I mean, they were just like praying that they could hang on in that game. Like, the final whistle blew and it was a 2-2 draw, and like, people stood up and applauded. They were like, thank God they held on. Nashville totally in control of that game in the second half. They got down 2-0, and really from that point on, they spent most of the time having shots and attempts on net and most of the time on that side of the pitch.
Yeah. Good job, pitch.
Thank you. That's pretty good.
I always like it when you use soccer terms. No, it was an exciting glimpse, maybe, at what this team could be offensively. I mean, the Leao goal was utterly absurd.
It's insane.
But they obliterated club records for shots and shots on goal. More than doubled, I think, the shots on goal. So maybe this team will pair good defense with better offense. And, you know, a lot of people I notice, like, our MLS writers, the Athletic, you know, not a lot of respect for Nashville SC, not a lot of expectation. So maybe they can surprise people.
They surprised people last year. Could do it again coming up this year. I mean, it's pretty clear. Like, Gary Smith has an identity that he wants to play, and they are defensively sound. Like, you don't generate a ton against Nashville SC, and they are very good defensively. The question has always been, can you find enough offense to go along with that? I mean, and we talked to Jamie Watson last week about this. I think if you're a Nashville SC fan, you've got to be very excited about Randall Leao and the way that he closed out last season, the way that he started this season with a goal on Saturday. I'm expecting some big things for him this year offensively. And you're talking about a guy that got a lot of talent. Like, I think back to the playoff game last year against an opponent who I will not name because it's part of the trivia question, an absolute laser in that game. So, hey, I think you feel great about him moving forward.
Good job. I would have totally botched that. See, this is one of many reasons it's better to have you at mic one than me. Am I mic two then? I
mean, yeah, mic two.
Yeah, okay. It's not like some radio thing where I'm mic seven.
No, you're good. Mic two.
Jared says I'm bad at mic one.
Wow, did that hurt you?
A little bit.
Okay.
But I said that may be true, but it's also true that I'm giving you a swirly.
Joe, you went to Knoxville over the weekend to watch Tennessee take on Vanderbilt in a top five matchup in college baseball. You're there Friday and Saturday. Vanderbilt wins 2 out of 3 over the weekend, including a phenomenal pitching performance on Friday night by Kumar Rocker. Tennessee responds on Saturday. They light up Jack Leiter a little bit, especially compared to what it was like going against Jack Leiter heading into that game. All in all, I thought a very entertaining weekend. I think if you're Tennessee, you still feel pretty good about yourself after that weekend, even though you lose 2 out of 3 to Vanderbilt. And I thought Vanderbilt, you know, a little bit of emotion they played with this weekend. I think, you know, maybe they heard some noise after the Georgia game. And we talked to Tim Corbin last week. They weren't very happy with their performance against Georgia. I thought a bit of a statement made by Vanderbilt as well.
Yeah, yesterday was certainly – it was up for grabs. You know, you got your third pitchers. Now, Tennessee, Tidwell is going to be, I think, a star for Tennessee. He's a freshman. He looked like it. Patrick Riley, I thought, had some, you know, ups and downs, but he's also a freshman with a lot of talent for Vanderbilt. But Enrique Bradfield yesterday, my goodness. 4 stolen bases, had a 5th taken away because he went off the bag on the slide, or that would have tied the school record. And he scored on a freaking pop-up to short. So the guy is electric, and he was very good at the plate yesterday. He's going to be a star, I think. You know, Rocker, I'm going to go on record. You know, Leiter, that was Leiter's worst game. He didn't – his fastball, he did not have the same command with his fastball he normally does. He still was good.
Yeah.
Tennessee got to him, got a couple shots off him. But even before that, I liked Rocker if I'm picking first. So it's the Pirates, right? This is
yep.
Yeah, the Pirates. Look, the size, you know that he is built for long seasons. You've seen him do it at the highest pressure moments, and he has got a snarl out there, and it was on display against the Vols. That was fun to watch.
He was fired up on Friday.
Yes, he was. And, of course, he was coming off his only bad outing of the year. But, you know, both those guys, they're going to be very tough to deal with moving forward. That's why Vanderbilt's one of the favorites to win it all. It still means something for Tennessee to get to lighter like that and to have a homer against them, 300 runs, and make a mistake at third, and then come back on Vanderbilt's closer.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it was a good weekend for both teams. I think right now, today, at least one of the polls, Vanderbilt stays 2 and Tennessee drops to 6, but they could both make runs. What if we had both of these teams in Omaha?
It'd be awesome.
Imagine
that. I'm pulling for it.
That'd be awesome.
I love me some college baseball. Like, I know it's not the most popular thing around here. I love watching college baseball.
Well, how much, you know, look, I think for Vanderbilt fans, I mean, they obviously they have built a really strong following. I mean, Vanderbilt fans, you know, fans love a winner. And I do think with Tennessee, and I wrote about this someday at The Athletic, Tony Vitello is a guy who needs to be kept.
Yeah.
And I think that other people are going to be coming for Tony Vitello. So, Danny White, it's not your top priority, of course. You're coming in, you're trying to fix football. Football feeds everything. But I would not let Tony Vitello go to another school. If I were Danny White, I'd give him the suites and a new stadium that can compete. And as well as he's recruited like this, what does that mean moving forward? Maybe college baseball becomes a bigger deal in this state.
Ryan Porth, do we have a winner on the trivia question for the Nashville SC tickets coming up on Saturday's game against Montreal?
Yes, Harrison was the one who correctly answered the trivia question, which was which two teams did Nashville SC beat in the playoffs last year? And that was Miami and Toronto.
So congratulations to Harrison. You'll be going to the game coming up on Saturday between Nashville SC and Montreal. I believe 1 o'clock.
A matinee
coming up on Saturday at Nissan Stadium.
A lot of matinees on the schedule this year.
I love it. Give me some matinee. All sports. Hockey, soccer, I don't care. Love me some matinee sports.
You know, the Preds have some weekend games that aren't matinees.
I know.
Come on, give us matinees.
That's right. That does it for 9 a.m. Here on Robbie and Rex Show. Joe, good to be back with you today. Enjoyed it?
Yes. You are Mike One all day. Mike One. Vibing with Mike One.
We are vibing here in Mike One. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.